Hey folks, welcome to the show. Hey Sharad, we are back in our home bastion. We have a fintech after, I don't know, 3 months. I could see that you were losing weight. Weakness was creeping in.
After a bunch of security and SaaS and B2B, which is all fun, we're back to fintech and lending and talking about working capital and MSME, all the stuff that we talk a lot about. So it's going to be fun.
Yeah, I know. Gives me great pleasure to welcome Mr. Vinny Patro from Hyderabad, who runs Recordant. Hey, Vinny, welcome to the show.
Hi, Nikhil. Thank you. Hi, Joe. Thank you so much for having me on the show.
So, Vinny is ex-IIM Calcutta. I think was out in 2011. Ever since that, he has been on multiple projects. Recordant, I think, is five and a half years old.
Yeah.
FinTech. 5 years now, yeah. FinTech platform, SaaS-based. The earliest impression when I saw your thing was, I thought it's like a collections agency or collection platform, and effectively you're looking at, lenders from the standpoint of recovering their books. But then the deeper we went, we realized, no, this kind of is opening to another box altogether. And anyone who has been in SME or who has dealt with SMEs, knows payments is such a major pain. And I think that also has come out of some sort of a personal experience, a personal journey as well. So would love to, start from the start. How did you think of a platform or a business model or a business case around this?
To begin with, I started as an entrepreneur at the age of 21 before I went to IIM Cal. This was a social impact, startup at that point of time. Fairly targeted at students in schools. But then after IIM Cal, I went on to co-found a couple of companies. One was in the e-commerce space, but rather digital marketing, I would say. It's the aggregation of analytics for e-commerce companies. And then the other was offshoot of IIM Job, which is IIMnet.com, which is a pre-skill management professionals. In both cases, that we've got a B2B base, or rather the models were B2B. And being an entrepreneur in the B2B space, and when you're actually, on the service side of things, you would know that the payments don't come out right.
Yeah.
And there's no, it's an universal fact. It's just not in India, but in other countries, it's in the same case. The payments actually don't come out right. And that's one part of it. But I think what's interesting, in my career was working with the government. So I was also on the side of not paying on time when I was in the government, of course. Yeah.
Right.
And our government's office, right? So it was funny, and it was just to reflect on what had happened, on the payment side, and how I had experienced it when I was an entrepreneur, and how I made others experience when I was in a bureaucrat was quite obviously the opposite side of things. And we realized that the entrepreneurs' payments are obviously the most important part of the business. If you want to grow in this, it's a space of SMEs, right? Startups is a different ballgame that we've seen, that even if you don't really have positive cash flow, you still raise money and then try to push your envelope. But then in SMEs, it's a very different ballgame. And then their ballgame is all about, if I get a cash today, and I'll be able to pay tomorrow. So it's quite a vicious cycle in the SME space and the entire value chain. And interestingly, it also started off with, my co-founder who runs Pools Night, but he also faced issues of not receiving school fee payments on time. And then, you still have to pay your teachers and employees and vendors and so on and so forth. So this whole thing, when we started diving deeper, we realized the problem is so huge in the country that runs into 10 lakh plus CR. And when we started off, of course, now the numbers that they talk about astonishingly high is as high as the 40 lakh or gap of big payments. And half of it, of course, the payments to be coming from the government, right? So in our journey, that's how we sort of looked at the problem, both at scale and both in terms of the importance of, for an SME or for an entrepreneur to run the business. And we thought this is the pain point we should solve.
Yeah.
And this is the pain point that's blocking every entrepreneur to go forward, to grow further. And that's how this recording started in 2019. And here we are today. As you put rightly, people probably consider or look at as a collection agency because this is one of the new categories that we're creating. But in a way, we are an account receivable automation or a collection automation, credit to cash cycle automation company. And primarily help these mean small and medium enterprises to sort of improve their collections and reduce their risk because we provide a lot of insights for them before they actually give credit to their buyers, which is actually a trigger for majority of the late payments.
Right.
And the problem statement is absolutely bang on, right? And that I don't think any of us need to be convinced on how big the opportunity is. I think we see that fairly regularly, even in the companies that we work fairly closely. To solve it, right? I mean, obviously, there's collection side of things, which is probably, you know, based on follow-ups and calling and just be at it, like, give me my money or you're running late. But the other side is probably even bridging it or creating an underwriting solution to fund that gap, right? How do you sort of see those two being tied together? Because from an outside perspective, they may come across as two very distinctive businesses. A lot of people, in fact, think of collections too, if there is a way to automate and outsource it. So how do you sort of tie that as a 360-degree solution of sorts? How do you do that?
So when we started looking, you know, deep diving into the problem, we understood the solutions for those who are suffering with working capital or cash flow problems are out there in terms of lending opportunities. But again, the challenge right there is the availability of automated data. If a small entrepreneurs or the medium enterprises, if they don't have enough of the credit, history in the credit bureaus, again, it gets challenging for them to get loans from the organized sector. So it's sort of a chicken and egg problem. And if you find yourself in a cash flow, deep cash flow problem, definitely, I think you should always look for funds. So for us, when we looked at this problem, I think let's solve it at the core of it, right? Mm-hmm. Which is where your trigger starts when you give credit. Make better decisions. It's exactly what we sort of tell them, you know, understand what you're running into, right? And then when you start running into, manage it in a way that you're not adding people to do the calling and spending money and time on figuring out how do you do this at a scale. Even for a small enterprise, running up 15 buyers or 100 buyers is something that a scale that they don't take it in an organized manner, or they don't rather implement things and then execute things in an organized manner, even if it's 100 bytes. So this technology obviously helps, you know, to deal with things at scale. So therefore, that's exactly where we come in and said, look, this thing start from which we call a complete credit to cash cycle, right? You start off making sure you make better decisions and make sure that everything is automated on the platform.
Mm-hmm.
You might not be able to do like a large organizations like Airtel and utility bills and all of that with the reminders and all of that because you're a small organization. But that's where I come in as a SaaS model. You just plug in and that will be available for you at a much lower cost. And you know, you'll be able to automate a lot of these things. And then at the end of this, you know, there are even legal notices that can be sent from our platform. And then caution notices that can be sent from our platform. And everything gets automated. You just have to plug in, you know, or rather just configure how many days you want to send the legal notice if the money's not received.
Mm-hmm.
So all of it is automated. You don't want the SME to run after or sending a legal notice to the lawyer and then, you know, the account, depending upon figuring out things. And on the lending side of things, again, we partnered with ICICI and then, you know, MTCash, NDP earlier, and we ran a pilot. And once it's sort of being streamlined, and Even the bankers, the lenders, the more confident, I think this is an SME that's looking forward rather making better decisions with data availability of their buyers. Obviously, there's a less risk associated with them and their ability to follow up or for collections or their ability to follow up to receive money on time is a lot better than the others. And in the process, we're also building a lot of a data trail. And this is data trail is where what I call is an alternative data for the lenders to obviously make better decisions. So therefore, technique has always been in the spectrum of our model, but then I think that's exactly not how we want to solve the problem. We want to solve the problem with reducing risk and provide with the data and technology, then bring in the cash.
Right.
Understood.
Right.
Understood.
Yeah. It's, I mean, I assume like a typical small manufacturer or maybe a very, you know, go-to customer for you guys, right? I mean, say I'm that and I sign up on Recordant and I, you know, you have three plans, I think, gold, platinum, diamond, depending on my scale, I sign up for one of them. Could you give a bit of a breakdown of my journey as your customer in the sense I'll have, say, multiple buyers or anchor manufacturers to whom I'm serving, right? Yeah. And I'm starting with manufacturing because probably it's much easier to understand. You know, yeah. There is a very clear accounts receivable cycle. There is a commodity or a product which is being moved. Services is a slightly different, subjective when it comes to delivery. But core manufacturing is pretty straightforward, right? So there, I presume you would be kind of, you know, you must be having like a Zoho type of a tool, right, at the back end through which I'm generating invoices, etc. Or you might be also integrating into my core system, correct? But does the journey start there, or is it one step before that as well, that you actually are giving me some sense about this buyer or their history or how they have kind of, you know, done what they have done, how they have been with other, because, you know, it's a credit from a bank standpoint is a very different dynamic. And, this is a very, very different dynamic. You actually want to do business with someone and you want to build a long-term relationship, right? So it cannot be that acrimonious or transactional from day one. So how do you, it would be great to kind of get a step-by-step of how the journey starts and how it ends.
Yeah, in fact, you're right. You know, the same example of manufacturing. Primarily, the use case gets a lot better in terms of understanding. The first thing is, you know, so manufacturer in the semi segment family has to depend upon a lot of the trade cycle.
Right.
Right. There are manufacturers who sell directly, and then, of course, they also sell it to the distributors and they sell it to the distributors. There are different channels, right? But there is one thing that is completely unavoidable in a country like India, being quite a large market, as the distributor network, right? So it passes on. The distributor is not going to pay to the manufacturer. We all know that. Now, where does it start? As far as the recorder is concerned, if you look at it, I'm going to help one step before even you raise the invoice, before even your distributor gets onto your accounting system. So the manufacturer can sign up on the platform for Recordant and enter the GST number of the distributor and get his reports.
Right.
And once he does basic due diligence on the financial health and the credit history, now that's when he makes a decision, all right, this distributor is good enough, but probably not a bunch of risk, and then he moves forward. Then, of course, the PO and then invoice all gets generated. So that's exactly where the second part of the platform comes in. As I pointed out, there's a data part of it and it's technology part.
But like, just to kind of put a pause on the data part first. I mean, on the data part, I'm assuming you'll be looking at some third-party data as well, not just Bureau, right? You also have your own.
That's right. So before the invoice is where the data comes in. And now the invoice can be generated in their accounting system. It could be Tally, Zoho's of the world. So the Recordant can get plugged into any of the accounting systems. So we have a Tally plugin, and then we have integrations with other accounting softwares where we will be able to integrate with their ERPs and accounting softwares. So there's no duplication of work as far as the invoice is raised, right? The invoice and accounting system does your accounting work.
Mm-hmm.
And none of these actually work on the accounts receivable part of it.
Mm-hmm.
It's exactly this software comes and sits on top of it once the invoice is generated, and you have messages and reminders that gets automated. And the interesting part of it, you know, every buyer of the manufacturer or every distributor of the manufacturer in this example that we're talking about will get a dashboard.
Mm-hmm.
You get a dashboard. If a manufacturer has about 100 distributors, all the 100 distributors get unique dashboards to see what they have purchased, now the invoices are raised, around the pending, and so on.
Does it also focus on the other side of the equation? How many you owe to your vendors, let's say, or what is the cash outflow or accounts payable? Does it part
of the kind of time?
Okay.
Not at this point of time. But that's the part of the roadmap.
Yeah.
So these dashboards sort of help the manufacturer to, you know, communicate or rather be more effective with their buyers. Because in normal cases, you know, even these accounting software that are available in the market today gives you a plugin for sending out the messages. But then what's a differentiating factor here is the message along the messaging along with the dashboard. This dashboard is quite either it's a magic link or a sign in with the phone number of the buyer, and buyer can see what's pending.
Right.
Then he gets different kinds of views, and he has the ability to dispute resolution there, or you know, raise a dispute if there's wrong invoice and all that. And he also has an option to make a payment. There's a convenient factor for it, and there's also an option for him to promise to pay. Right. And that helps the manufacturer on figuring out the cash flow, planning the cash flows better. So this dashboards are a very effective way of getting people to sort of be more disciplined or be more accountable, because you're the tie of a big time. Yeah. And what we say in the dashboard is a lot more effective than just seeing a SMS that comes and says that your deal is some upcoming or your it's sold, whatever. So that's one part of, initial part of the journey after the invoice is raised. And post that, we do also have this interesting thing called a statement of accounts. It's a ledger is what we call. Typically, the manufacturers in today's world, they download the ledgers and keep sending. But here is where, there's an automation here. The way the statement of account statements come to us from the banks on a monthly basis, it's the same thing. The manufacturer will be able to drive the same, in a 15 days time frame or 1 month, whatever you can want to go. And it's just landing in their inboxes and so on and WhatsApp and so on and so forth with the buyers. So, but they are on tap, keeping tap on what is being pending. So these all increases the efficiency of the way the seller is, the manufacturer here in this case is managing their buyers' transactions. And with the information and with the trail of the history on how the payments have been made. Now post that there's a very unique aspect to Recordant, which is where we all our journey has started. Mm-hmm. This is to build a credit bureau for SMEs.
Yeah,
that's exactly what we call credit registry. And this is the messaging is very different here. We don't say that your payment is late and so on and so forth. The messaging here is very different, saying that your track record, is affecting your payment cycle or credit history, your payments probably not coming on time. So leave you less chances of getting credit in the future, things like that. It's just imagine a civil sending us a message about the change of the ratings or decline in our ratings because of the bad payment record. And this generates a very different kind of trigger for the buyers to act upon.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And beyond this, again, your buyers are still not paying, and there's next level of things which primarily gets into the caution notices and legal notices.
Right.
So today we see these manufacturers in this example of how our business is using our platform. They typically use each of these modules for different kinds of buyers. They're good buyers. They're just only sending reminders. They're late payers. They also use credit registry. Then there are default, buyers not been paying for more than a year or so. And then we've seen a lot of these caution notices and legal notices going out to them.
Yeah.
Because they've been stuck for more than a year and so on. So that's typical use cases on the side of post-invoice in our journey. And then on the side of a manufacturer, we see a lot of these people, manufacturers, buying the report of the distributors and some, even in the institutional sales case, right? They buy the report.
Right.
So typically that's a use case in the journey, yeah.
The thing is that on the on the data front, effectively, I understand completely, there's basically positive reinforcement for good behavior, right? And the other way around. That's how the long-term game here works, right? But for instance, if I am a buyer and I am defaulting on my payments, right? Does CIBIL look at that at all? I'm not talking of bank payments, obviously. I'm looking at operational. And is the idea for you guys to kind of plug it into CIBIL, or you guys want to set up an alternate data lake of your own and start rating companies based on that, or start creating a blacklisting portfolio of companies who are not paying on time? I'm sure a lot of your buyers who are not paying on time, effectively they must be getting filtered out from the seller's end as we speak. But is that also part of the big picture to formalize that into a monetizable product, or is it more of a feature as of now?
Well, as of now, it manufacturers and businesses use this platform and use the credit registry more for the feature. But I think in our roadmap, in our vision, it's quite always been always been clear that we want to build this data repository.
Got it.
And the data repository obviously needs scoring at some point in time.
Mm-hmm.
But there's a catch here in the scoring. And they see the score, especially small and medium entrepreneurs. They say, what does this score mean to me?
Yeah.
How are you arriving at a score? You tell them, this is a 700 or 900. Okay, so what does it mean? Versus giving them the score is they're 95% on time.
Yeah.
Right? They say, they're 95% on time. It makes a lot of sense for them.
Mm-hmm.
But you say 700 or 900, what's going on behind?
Sure. Yeah.
But at the same time, the scoring it should be required in other aspects, if not on the payment side of it. So we are obviously in the game of building a repository and scoring it at some point in time in the future.
Mm-hmm.
Probably years from now, or probably earlier than that. And with respect to collaborating this data or aggregating this data with others, for example, Sybil, it might be better discussions with Sybil also. Sybil was keen on plugging this data into their repository as well. Yeah, so we're too early to sort of comment how this would take place, but we are open in terms of making sure this data becomes rather than data gets democratized in terms of helping businesses make better decisions.
Right.
As it scales with this data and your experience, I mean, there's a massive advisory angle that opens up, right? You can actually go to manufacturers and advise them on better cash flow management and better picking of the right combination of vendors as well. That sort of gets opened up, right? Interesting. Because the thing with these late payments and working capital is it's non-interest bearing, right? So there is the fear in retail borrowers is that the next time I borrow, I mean, I have to pay higher interest rates and everything. But working capital, everyone assumes it's free credit. So, if I'm late, I'm not getting penalized for uninterest payments as well, right? So this score is actually, when you say that 95% of the time it's on time or 50% of the time it's not on time, those guys have a direct revenue loss coming up in future if they continue with that behavior. That's the fear that is sort of being instilled to get those payments in line, right?
Yeah, you're right. In fact, thanks to the so much of campaigns that went around like this in India, and also thanks to the credit bureau, the SMEs are now understanding the power of data, what probably it will do to them in the future. And they also understand today, they as consumers, they've seen the consumer tech revolution happening.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And they as consumers, they see what data is doing to their own lives. And it's how they might probably impact their businesses in the future. And most of these interesting small and medium enterprises that we interact with, they're all second generation, third generation entrepreneurs who are back from the, states or some other countries or went to schools, business schools and come back and running their businesses.
Yeah.
Quite an interesting phase that we've been part of.
Well, very interesting. And, when you look at some of these bigger companies who are sort of reselling or selling stuff on Amazon, right, they seem to be slightly more scared anyway because they fear that they're going to get delisted from the platform. And because there is so much power that one distributor has, when it's more fragmented, that's when a credit registry portal probably gets elevated in importance, right? It sort of makes it, sort of brings it all together. So it's quite interesting.
On collections, collections is a spectrum, right? You have soft collections, SMS-based, calling. Then you have hard collections. You obviously have, a lot of legal maneuvering that one can do. My question is, in your experience, we have had collection platforms earlier. I mean, pure play lending-based collection platforms, where the common view was that soft triggers more or less works for most of the cases. And otherwise, the price is kind of, the risk is kind of priced in. So, the... One now does, and especially now, the Reserve Bank is also very, very
plugged in to make sure that the consumer interest is maintained and there is no, you know, harassment, etc.
At the retail level.
At the retail level, yeah. What's been your view on this, you know, within Record? And obviously, you want to have a digital-first automated solution. You don't want to actually, get very, very deep into it. It's a murky world. Number one, it's operationally very intensive, and it brings a lot of reputational risk also to you as a intermediary platform. So, what's been your experience so far in terms of how you're viewing collections?
Yeah, you're right, and this is quite common in, you know, especially with collections in the banking industry.
Yeah,
where you have people going to houses and asking for money. EMIs and skip EMIs. In fact, about 4 or 5 months back, I was on a panel with Sriram Capital. So he was telling me that they still have feet on the street, and then they just collect EMIs in cash or UPI. Quite surprising. And then they have over 70,000 employees across the country. Quite a heavy, you know, network, and it's not very different, but the numbers are quite low with respect to any other banks as well. But the scenario here with SMEs are very different. There are not so many.
Mm-hmm.
It's also because an SME or a manufacturer who probably has, let's say, even 5,000 distributors, for all in all cases, about 50 or 100 of the distributors end up defaulting, right? And now he already operates as much.
Yeah.
And these collections guys who actually operate at the offline level, they need volumes.
Yeah.
Right? 100 is not a big number. The interesting part is this 100 is not in one city.
Yeah.
It's spread across the country.
Right. Oh, yeah.
You know what, this collection guys ask, these SMEs typically, they're giving 20% of the whole thing, or 25. Banks, it's very different because in each city, you have a lot of rooms.
Yeah.
So in our experience of solving this problem, we've had, discussions with these kind of agencies that are operating out of, different places, especially Bombay. You don't even find the others, you know, doing collections for SMEs because it's not viable for them.
Yeah.
So for us as Record, we want to obviously provide the digital solution, right? While we provide the entire business solution, we also have a marketplace where we connect the SME, the manufacturer, in cases where recovery has become too difficult, and we connect them and leave it there.
Right.
But then we don't get inside, can't get into it.
Right.
Right. Yeah. So that's pretty much the largest scope. But to put things in perspective, like it's not viable in this semi industry for running a physical collection agency. It's a call center, and you know, all of that is workable, but then the numbers don't really support.
Yeah. Right. But roughly, if you had to talk to you in terms of your experience, you know, like say there have been 100 cases where payments have been delayed. I'm assuming that in all the 100 cases, there is some sort of an automated collection regime which kicks in, right? There must be reminders going in, et cetera, and out of that, there will be like a smaller funnel where you actually end up, you know, sending some sort of show cause notice or legal. What's the funnel looking like? Typically for you?
I can actually come in with numbers. In fact, I rather can take you, draw parallels or rather before and after, right? So what we've observed is we've done a survey for companies which are not using any accounts receivable software, just using the accounting software, slick talents and all of that. And we drive deeper into it and then pull the numbers out. 21% people pay on time, right? And the 21% becomes about 40, around 41 with follow-ups.
Okay.
what it means is 21 without follow-ups and 41 with follow-ups.
Correct.
Then the 41 becomes 53 with the rigorous follow-ups.
Right.
Okay.
Well, these guys, you know, call them up and then left, right, center, money, mountain, all of that.
And do you have to be conscious about when you're following up, what time of the day?
Because I'm talking about outside of the recording.
Okay.
It's completely outside of the recording. In a case where a business is not using the receivable software at all,
yeah.
I'll come to the part of the recording.
Okay.
So the 53% is what typically these SMEs have full visibility on. When the payments are going to come in, 21% on time, and then after a follow-up within a week or 2 weeks, and then rigorous follow-up, all of that. Now, what's very challenging is that 47% of the payments are unpredictable.
Mm-hmm.
Out of which, out of 47, 44, they don't know when they'll come. This is I'm paying next week, and then the payment. Absolutely no clue when this is going to come.
Just out of interest, when does a clock start for a payment not being on time? Like, is there like a 30 DPD, 60 DPD, 90 DPD? How do you look at it?
Yeah. So, it's very, very different, right? Geometrically, you know, you'll be surprised if I tell you 210 days DPD is the threshold in Bangalore.
Interesting.
In the corrugated box manufacturing industry, the corrugated boxes are supplying with a 210 days threshold credit period.
Okay. Crazy. That's the base level of understanding.
No, that's the extreme, right? That's extreme.
Right.
And there are commonly we see it's about 45 days.
45 days, okay.
No, but they operate 30, but largely it's 45 days across country. Sorry?
The 30 to 45 days are sort of agreed upon credit terms, correct? Like, we're not tying on the delayed on that. So, but the 210 number you get, that's after adding on delays for that example, or that's the agreed upon?
Agreed upon is about 90 days. Right. And then after that, you know, another 120 is like a threshold.
That's all interesting.
It's quite crazy.
I mean, if you start calculating how much yield you're earning on those,
So coming back to, those are numbers, you know, but there's 3% defaults in the market. So when we looked at businesses who are using recording platform, we realized the change significantly.
Mm-hmm.
On time from 21 to it has become 45,
mm-hmm.
purely because of the dashboards and the statement of accounts and all of that. And with reminders, the 45 has become, you know, 58, and we have credit registry notifications that sort of became 75%.
Mm-hmm.
And with caution and legal notices, they all end up at about 95%.
Mm-hmm.
And then 3% goes on the legal cases and recoveries beyond legal notice.
Right.
So 2% is where we've observed over a period of time uncollectible and defaulted completely, written off.
Right.
So at various stages, we see, the cash flow visibility at least getting a lot better after a year.
Hmm.
I don't know how I answered your question, Nikhil, but at different stages, we see this percentage playing out.
Interesting. No, this is super fascinating, Vinny. In terms of how do you view growth here, in the sense that you yourself mentioned that, I mean, obviously, there are lots of SMEs, correct? No doubt about that. But effectively, I'm assuming your current focus from a buyer standpoint would be on large distributors, or at least which are larger in relative terms to the SMEs you are serving, correct? So effectively, how do you see that grow going forward, in the sense that there will be in every industry, in every sector, there will be a few large players, right, who are kind of aggregating demand at one level or the other. So the idea is to go deeper and deeper into that. Are there specific sectors you're focusing on today and you want to kind of go, horizontally into others? Is there a geographical expansion angle in your mind? And, you know, from a monetization standpoint as well, you're right now, it's a SaaS platform. So you basically have a freemium type of a offering, right, with some sort of a pay as you go thing which has been built inside. How do you see that read with the growth trajectory for the business?
Yeah, I'll start off with maybe sector and our plan. You know, if you are sector agnostic, right? As a platform, and anyone who operates on trade credit can use the platform. Having said that, our focus areas have been in the top three sectors that we had seen as an attraction. That's construction industry, that includes obvious construction materials and electrical and all of that. Two, we've seen the F&B. Right. Three, we have seen textile.
Interesting.
Right. And F&B and textile, especially F&B, you know, trade is unavoidable because of perishable products, right? So these are the three sectors. Primarily, we see the a lot of traction, and our focus will also be around that. In terms of geographic focus,
just one question, sorry, Vinny, on that.
Yeah,
we target areas, right? Sectors. For your client, the counterparty, whoever the suppliers or vendors are, do they need to also have a level of tech sophistication to engage with this product? Like, are they even looking at emails, or are they getting those reminders on some dashboard which they don't have? Do they, is the expectation for them to invest something as well to effectively communicate with your client? Or, you know, as long as they have a phone and an email or a WhatsApp, they will keep getting those reminders? Like, how, like, what is the expectation from those guys?
Well, as long as they have emails and phones, as long as they have phones, which are like basic Android phones or iPhones.
Okay.
And these phones don't work without an email ID, right? And they don't have obviously phone numbers. And the WhatsApp is quite common. So you don't need any investment in software on the buyer side of things. And as for the manufacturer, the sellers who are using the platform, right? In the example of manufacturing that we were talking about, in fact, your question was very interesting because are they technology ready, right?
Yeah.
So what we've observed is they're actually not. That has been one of the biggest challenges, right? They all want to implement technology, right? Like I said, this is there's a second year entrepreneur say that, you know, I want to automate this, I want to use technology. Now, for him to champion the team, that becomes a bottom. Now, the guy who's probably reporting to me says that, sir, bahut achha hai, I'm implement karenge. But then that's the change, right? How do you implement it? And that's where exactly we've started off providing even a dedicated support.
Right.
On site, we send in the dedicated champions. We call them sort of digital champions, and they go out and help them implement. So I think there is a huge challenge. There is this whole thing called they want it, or they also think they need it, but then they don't have resources, bandwidth, and DNA. Most times, the DNA is just failing the technology, but not just our software, any other software for that matter.
Yeah.
Right? So it's all part of a transformation, the way we see it, and transformation for even the businesses. Right? So yeah, they're not technology ready.
Sure.
So coming back to the technical, geographical focus, Nikhil, we see a lot of traction happening in Bombay Western region, primarily Bombay, Ahmedabad, and Pune, and Bombay being obviously the hotspot for businesses and the very forward-thinking entrepreneurs who want to implement technology and so on and so forth. So for us, Bombay has always been the hub and the cluster where we focus. Even back our sales teams in sort of Bombay, while we have people sitting in our other cities, but then Bombay has always been a large benchmark for us. Yeah.
Right. Right. In terms of from a monetization standpoint, like I'm assuming because you're catering to SMEs right now, you went for like a very plain subscription type of a framework. You didn't go for like a, you know, fixed licensing fee plus per transaction SaaS and, you know, kind of have API integrations. You're not linking your payout to the quote unquote dollar value that you're saving for them. You are basically linking it to you know, number of notifications, or you're linking it to a flat charge on a monthly basis for the usage of the software. Is the idea at some point in time to kind of become more API first as you go larger and larger into the value chain? Or you think this problem is frankly an SME problem and it's large enough or deep enough to limit yourself to a more simplified monetization framework?
I think, see, as a strategy, if you look at it, you know, we want to be seen as this automation software. And what I give you is the best technology and, you know, best data platform for you to run your things more efficiently. I'm not here to promise you that somebody will pay on time because I'm giving you a service.
Right.
I'm saying I'm going to increase you know, your productivity. And I'm going to give you more time as an entrepreneur to think about growth. I'm going to automate all of this. So we're not here to say, look, you pay me because somebody is. I'm not here to tell, you know, this is an outcome-based service.
Mm-hmm.
So we're quite clear on this because we actually ran the pricing model differently earlier to understand how the market responds. When we did the whole lot of A/B testing, people were quite open and then happy to pay when they received the payment. But then the way the industry operates in India, each sector has different margins that they work with.
Yeah. Got it.
For example, a manufacturer has a better margin, a distributor that doesn't have, and a wholesaler doesn't have. Even in the same sector and the different levels of a value chain, your margins are very different.
Mm-hmm.
And they actually don't have, some of them work as thin as like 2%, 2.5%, because this is holding the stock there rather than a stock point. So it rather became quite complex for us. And we thought, you know, we'll put it open for a bidding model that, you know, give them a start bidding how much percentage. But yeah.
Mm.
And then we realized, I think we went back to the drawing board and said, listen, guys, I think we are solving the efficiency problem. Right. Let's
you want to stick to like being a TSP and a software solution. No plans to bring lenders on board and become a DSA for them. And
there is a plan. We've done a pilot, like I pointed out. We've done a pilot with ICICI last year and FTCash, and then we are again looking at getting out and for collaboration to start do a lending based on the platform. Mm-hmm. And then there is it's the part of the plan.
Yeah. So that they are a percentage on AUM. Will probably kick in.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Absolutely, right. That's also another monetization model for us, yeah.
Great. And what's the plan in terms of capital, in terms of from a fundraising standpoint? Are you bootstrapped to date? Have you raised some capital already? Are you burning or you are sustainable and you need it for growth? Would be great to get some color from you on that.
Yeah. So I really bootstrapped, I can say. We've not raised the VC money, but we've raised angels' money.
Got it.
And we've raised money from family offices. Right? And total money that had gone in building the recurrent is close to about 15 CR.
Got it.
Okay. Of which our big had come to be angels and family offices.
Right.
Now we are doing a couple of rounds. One is a rich round for us, a 4 CR round. Another is a 3 million round. A 3 million round, we're also looking at buying out the, exiting early investors.
Got it.
We are not cash flow positive. We are right now by burn.
Mm-hmm.
But the way things are looking like, we will be able to become cash flow positive by the end of this year or early January.
Got it.
Okay. That's the target.
And
this force, what the raising is purely for becoming cash flow positive.
Got it.
And the 3 million raise that we're doing is completely for growth and, buying up the exiting investors. Yeah.
Got it.
So this will be your first institutional sort of push towards raising capital.
Yes.
That makes sense. And I guess for B2B SaaS companies, that early growth usually comes with some burn, right? And people, all that burn is just customer acquisition cost. You got to burn too.
It is customer acquisition cost, even technology cost. Very technology heavy, right? I run 9 modules in a single platform, and then
makes sense. And it was fun. It was very interesting business. We've spoken obviously to a bunch of fintech operators, ranging from lenders to even automated collection agencies, and so it's a slightly different tangent, and very interesting that it's almost like once you start lending, it becomes like a entire value chain play, right? It becomes a much more 360 degree product, right?
Yeah.
Great. Nomini, thanks a lot for your time. Very insightful conversation. And, good luck for your fundraising journey, and wish you bigger and more significant milestones in the future. And we'll obviously be, sitting on the sidelines cheering for you. And with that, it's Nikhil Arora with me, Shar Tupran, signing off.